You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. In July of this year, University of Wisconsin System President Kevin Riley announced that he'll be leaving his post at the end of December after 9 years on the job.
President Riley has been with the university since 1996. He served as the UW Extension Chancellor from 2000 till 2004 when he became System President. When he leaves in December, he'll join the American Council on Education and return to teaching part-time.
Kevin Riley joins us now in studio to reflect on his tenure as the University System President. Kevin, thank you for joining us.
Happy to be here.
Well, you are the second longest-serving president of the UW system. How do you feel about leaving after all that time?
Old. No, I don't. It isn't. I've 9.5 years it will be before I step out in December. So, no, I'm very proud and honored to have had the job. You know, it's one of the great jobs in American higher education. I think, you know, Wisconsin is a small state, relatively poor compared to some other states, and it says a lot about the values of this state that it has been able to build and sustain a wonderful university system, which has done such wonderful things for so many generations of Wisconsinites. And, you know, whenever there are controversies, and there always are, I always find when you scratch down a little bit, people are very, very proud of their university. And the Wisconsin idea, the notion that the boundaries of the university are the boundaries of the state, I think have made this place feel like it belongs to the people much more than some other universities where I've worked or know.
Now, it's been 9 years. Coming in, did you have a vision? And how did that vision evolve and come to fruition over those 9 years?
Sure. Well, I think the big vision in my time has been how do we help get more college-educated people into Wisconsin? We know that our percentage of folks with a baccalaureate degree is about 25.5%. The national average is about 27.5%. Minnesota, our nearest neighbor to whom we compare ourselves a lot, is between 32 and 33%. And what you find when you look across the country is the percentage of the population with a college degree tracks almost one-to-one with the average income in the state. And guess what? With Minnesota, 15 or so years ago, we were about even with them in the percentage of college-educated people. They're now 7 or so percentage points ahead of us, and their average income is between 4,000 and 5,000 higher than ours now. That's a trend that we can't allow to continue. So we got together, the chancellors of all of the institutions and I, a number of years ago, and said, how are we going to address this? And we came up with the growth agenda for Wisconsin, which said we are going to add 80,000 additional degree graduates by 2025 beyond those we would normally have gotten. And I'm proud that even through some really tough budget years, we are now on track to do that. I hope we can stay there. We will need some support from the state to do that, to get there. But boy, it's a wise investment when you see that relationship between average income and the percentage of college-educated people.
Now, you mentioned every tenure has controversies. They're always there, ups and downs. You've had a few over the past few years. What do you feel have been the main sticking points when you look back on some of those recent controversies?
Well, I mean, I think one big one really was the debate over whether the system would stay together. Whether the UW campus would split off, have its own board, be a separate entity. And I think that was a tough fight because it was a civil war, and those are always sort of the roughest ones. I'm proud of the way people conducted themselves for the most part through that. I'm believing that we'd have to work as colleagues no matter what the outcome was. It provided an opportunity for the state as a whole, I think, to look at the value of having an integrated system. And the decision finally was there is real value in that, especially when you're trying to produce more graduates, to do more research that translates into jobs and new industries in the state at lower cost. Because by sharing costs, by coordinating programming and research in one system, you have less duplication, you have less administrative overhead. And that the decision was, yeah, that's what we want in the University of Wisconsin.
Now, you were opposed to that splitting off of the UW system satellites. And how do you think, had it gone through, how would that have affected the UW system as we know it?
Well, I think it's likely when you look at other states that have gone through this or have systems structured more in the way we would have been, that we would have had and likely many more out-of-state students in. We would have had higher costs to produce students. We would have had higher administrative costs. We would have had more duplication of degree programs because there wouldn't have been the central coordination through one Board of Regents in my office.
What about maybe advantages that we passed up in terms of bringing more resources to the UW-Madison in here?
Well, I think we should do that, and we can do that, and we have done that with Madison as part of the system. I mean, it's been in the time that UW-Madison's been part of the system that it's risen to be one of the great international universities. And nobody's a bigger enthusiast about the University of Wisconsin-Madison than I am. That's where, indeed, I'll go back and do my teaching. So everybody wants Madison to do well. The question really was, what was the best model for it to do well and for all the other institutions in the system to thrive with it?
Well, earlier this year, as you well know, an audit revealed that the UW system was holding $648 million in cash reserves, which led to tension with the state legislature. Why was the UW system holding those funds?
Well, yeah, the question always is, with any organization, how much do you need in reserves? If you have none and you have a crisis, then people will say, my God, didn't you have any money in the bank? And now it's disaster that you didn't, because we have nothing to cover these problems. So we were running, 20, close to 25% finally. That was 90 days of operating costs for us on our budget, 3 months of operating costs. We talked about that with the Board of Regents annually. It's in our annual financial report, which was audited by the Legislative Audit Bureau every year. So we thought, okay, people know about this, that's fine. Now, the numbers had gotten high enough, I think, that when some legislators who evidently didn't know about it found out, it became an issue for them, especially around the issue of how do you relate it to tuition. Our assumption was, if you've got the right amount of reserves, you want to keep them, so you don't want to eat them down. So you do need to raise tuition sometimes to deal with the operating costs from year to year. But what we've done is to say, okay, what's the right level now? I mean, we never had a policy before, so we developed with the legislature, with the governor's office, a policy that says if you have below 10%, each campus that has below 10 has to have a plan to get to 10, because below 10 we believe is too low. If you have above 15%, then you need to give us a plan about how you're going to spend that money, so it's just clear to everybody. And that's 15%, I hasten to add, is not intended as a cap, but as a trigger for reporting how you would spend the money. So I think the virtue of this discussion is we'll have some consensus around what it ought to be, and people will know more about how it will be spent in the future. So I think, despite the ruckus, I think, you know, we've landed in a good place, and I think we'll move on.
Looking back, do you think, you know, you've obviously gone in the direction of greater transparency. Was that a miscalculation not to have been more transparent up front way back then?
You can always be more transparent, and more transparency is almost always better than less. I think our assumption was, since in public meetings of the Board of Regents, we talked about these reserves at the levels they were, because they were in our annual financial report, because they were audited by the Legislative Audit Bureau, that financial report was, that was very, very transparent. Now, it turns out, from what we've learned, a lot of the legislatures didn't, despite that auditing, didn't know about it.
I've been reading the papers, of course, and many people have said, you have said you're not stepping down because of that most recent flap. You know, the timing, some people are scratching their heads going, is that enough to, you know, cause him to hang it up and move on? What do you say to that?
Sure. Well, you know, I will have been president for 9.5 years when I stepped down on December 31st. I was the extension chancellor for 4 years before that. So that's 13.5 years in these sort of really public, intense, 24/7 kinds of jobs. That's a big stretch of somebody's life. And I'm not ready to retire by any means, but I am ready to do some other things with my life before I am ready to retire. So the president of the Board of Regents, the vice president, will tell you that I was talking with them well before we had the discussion around the balances about how do we set up a good transition plan so that I could move out in an orderly way and they could do a search and get a good person in. And I think that's exactly what we're doing now.
Now, You talked about weathering controversies. It's part of any tenure. It's what you expect when you do a job that's high profile like this. On the other hand, things have been divisive in Wisconsin. There has been sort of, for a while, I think, kind of unprecedented divisiveness among people in the legislature on all kinds of different levels. You had Act 10, which may have had an impact on the university. How does this fare, like, just on the meter of controversy and kind of uproar? Was this something beyond the pale that you saw, or was this par for the course?
Well, I like to tell my friends who are presidents of public university systems in states that are almost consistently blue or almost consistently red that their job is easier than when you're in that job in a state that's purple, that flips back and forth, and there are those controversies more often and shifts in control. So I do think it is an easier job if you are in a blue state or a red state. But Wisconsin has been for a while one of those states that flips back and forth politically. And I think part of what people in the public university need to do is to work with the people who win elections and the people they appoint to the Board of Regents. That's just part of the job. If you're not up for that, you shouldn't take the job.
What about Act 10? Now, obviously, this was controversial in the state at large. What about the impact on the university? Was there an impact there? Did it, for instance, affect the university system's ability to attract top talent?
Well, you know, what we said on the issue of unionization was we are neutral as a university, and that really is a matter for our employees to decide what they want to do and try to influence their legislators, the governor, to do what they want to do. And I think that's appropriate because, you know, we had employees and we have stakeholders who were on both sides of that. For the institution to weigh in on either side, I think, would have been wrong.
We're speaking with Kevin Riley, president of the University of Wisconsin System. He's stepping down from that post after 9 years.
And we'd like to hear any questions you might have for President Riley. And what do you want to see for the future of the University of Wisconsin System? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send us an email, talk@WPR.org. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.
We're speaking with Kevin Riley, president of the University of Wisconsin System. He's leaving that post next month after 9 years.
And we'd like to hear from you. Do you have questions? What do you want to see for the future of the University of Wisconsin System? You can join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Let's take one of our callers. Next, we have Eric joining us in Green Bay. Hi, Eric.
Hi. I got a quick question. Why is it so difficult to make it, why can't it make it easier to transfer credits from the community college like NWTC, those kind of situations, or even from, let's say, La Crosse to Madison? Madison seems like they're all on their own. They won't let any credits in and no transfer credits. I would think if you have a state system, you should be able to transfer credits and make it easier for students to make it cost effective and easier for students to better their education or move from one school to another school.
All right. Gotcha, Eric. Thanks. What would you say to Eric?
A couple things. It's a good question, and I think it should be easier. And it's something that we have worked a lot on. It is a lot easier now, I can tell you, than it was a number of years ago. And up in his area in Green Bay, we have an innovation there that will help with that called, I like to call it, the upside down degree. So somebody who completes an associate degree at NWTC, Northeast Tech College, not NW, but Northeastern Technical College is up there, can come into UW Green Bay and start as a junior and do his or her general education in the junior and senior year. So most people who go through 4 years at a baccalaureate campus will do their general ed the first 2 years and then do their major. So in these applied degrees, we have the major, in effect, treated as the degree from the technical college, and then you do your general education in the second 2 years to accommodate that that kind of thing. And, you know, we know for a fact, both in Wisconsin and across the nation, many more students who get a baccalaureate degree have credits from more than one institution now. We call it the swirl phenomenon. Students take credits from a variety of different places, and I think it is incumbent on us to make it as easy as possible. Now, having said that, you don't want to give freshman composition credit for a welding course. That would not be appropriate. So there have to be some distinctions made. But within that fairly narrow range, I think there are many, many ways we can continue to improve that transferability.
Now, I want to ask you a little bit about construction. Now, during your tenure, there were more than $3.9 billion worth of projects constructed on UW campuses. And you know, some people look at that construction and say, you know, with tuition and people struggling, the economy struggling, wouldn't we be better off passing savings off to students instead of spending $3.9 billion on construction? How do you justify that?
A couple of things. I think, again, that's a question which is looming larger for us because we have many more ways of delivering higher education now electronically that don't involve as many students having to be in as many buildings for as long as they used to. A thing I would say, though, is a lot of those buildings are constructed with private money. They're money that is given by donors for a naming opportunity on a building. And a lot of parents and students want certain amenities. We're talking about a market and market demand for certain kinds of amenities. And a lot of our campuses are at a point where some of the building stock is getting kind of old and tired, and parents come on and kids, prospective students come on campus and say, "Whoa, I don't like that kind of dorm. You know, we want the dorm that these other places have." So I think we have to look at all of that and say, what's the best way to go? I would expect in the future there will be less need for buildings on campus than there were in the past. And you're talking, of course, not only here about dorms and academic buildings, but research facilities. And there, the more research dollars we attract here, the more research we do, the more the need may be for labs and other kinds of research facilities. So, again, you have to look at the whole picture 360.
Let's go to the phones again. Jane is next, calling from Menominee. Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Say, well, and I kind of have a unique thing because I'm also a high school counselor and I push the UW systems a lot because they're great schools. They're
Thank
all
you.
Good. But I can tell you as a parent of one, it's a little frustrating with the nursing situation that's going on in the state. There's a shortage of nurses all over. And my daughter's a sophomore at UW Milwaukee in the nursing program, and she's worked hard to stay on track to be done in 4 years and took a summer school course. And now she gets to the point where she's going to be a second semester of her sophomore year, and she's going to be applying for clinicals, and they have only 80 spots available for approximately 150 students applying, including they allow students from the technical college in Milwaukee to also apply for these clinical experiences. And from my standpoint, it's very frustrating as a parent of a child who is trying to work hard, you know, works as a CNA at a nursing home during breaks and everything else, and then there's no guarantee that she's even going to get into her clinicals for that semester, and then she can reapply, of course, but, you know, what is she supposed to do in that semester, stay in school and have us pay more tuition? So, you know, the demand is there. Kids want to get in that major, and they're being told basically, you know, come to school, stay on track, be on track, and then there's no guarantee. So,
all right. Well, thank you, Jane. What about the bottleneck in the nursing school when there's a demand for nurses?
Well, first of all, good for your daughter for wanting to be a nurse. Good for you for being a high school counselor. I know how hard you folks work with so many students that you have to advise now at the high school level. I don't know the particulars, obviously, of your daughter's situation at UW-Milwaukee other than what you're saying. What I do know is that, you know, we don't in the university control how many clinical placements there are out there. We have to work with the hospitals, the nursing homes, the other places, and there are only so many of those out there at any one time that are willing to do it. I'm sure we would love to have many more of them available so that every semester, everybody who wants one could get placed immediately in it. That's probably just not the fact because they're not all out there. What I can tell you is that we've worked really hard, and I give great credit to our nursing faculty. They were leaders in this. They got together probably 12 years ago now and said, let's do a collaborative nursing program, which we will offer electronically to students all around the state, especially aimed at RNs who are working locally and can't come back, many of them women, many of them women with family responsibilities working out around the state. Let's deliver a baccalaureate degree program, a BSN, externally, as it were, using electronic means. And so we have had for 12 or 13 years this collaborative nursing program. Now UW-Milwaukee will also be taking the lead with its nursing program. They'll be one of the first five programs with our new UW Flex option, so that students will be able to earn the Bachelor of Science in Nursing from UW-Milwaukee through a competency-based format. So I hear you. We're working on some of these problems. I think we're out ahead in some ways, but the clinical placements is often one where we just can't create those placements if they're not there.
Now, there's been a lot of discussion lately, to dovetail off Jane's call, and thank you for that call, Jane. A lot of discussion lately about whether it's right to be telling everyone that going to college is the proper thing to do, the thing that's going to pay the highest dividends later in life. The cost can be devastating. The economy isn't necessarily supporting all of these graduates. As UW Systems president, would you still, in good faith, tell students that it's the right thing to do to go to college?
Yes, and here's what I mean. I don't mean by going to college, everybody should come to UW La Crosse and get a baccalaureate degree. College means more than that. A number of my kids have gone to Madison Area Technical College. Fine. If a student wants to start there, that's great. But get in to the stream as early as you possibly can. We know that your chances of making a decent living, if you're an 18-year-old now in the 21st century through a working lifetime, is going to be very dependent on your having some kind of post-secondary credential. It's one of the best investments that anybody can make. And for those who are specifically saying you don't need to go to college at all, just go out into the workforce, and some, you know, that might be fine for some kids immediately, but then my guess is 5 years from that decision, they'll be thinking, wow, I'm going to need a higher level credential to go on and earn a decent living. A lot of the people who are saying that, when you look at what their own kids are doing, you find they're enrolled in some pretty high quality colleges.
All right. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for joining us today.
Happy to be here, and good luck with your show. I've been watching it develop with interest.
Appreciate
that.
Or
I should say listening to it develop with interest.
We've been speaking to Kevin Riley, president of the University of Wisconsin System. He'll be leaving that post at the end of December.